It may be helpful for us to quickly glance at the broader context that time and Emmanuel Wallerstein's analysis has enhanced in anticipation of our further look into Emmanuel's book. So this is going to be a little tiny excerpt from Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System, for Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914. Quote, "The tide, that is, the European Revolution of 1848, as all such great happenings, was made up of a mixture of movements and objectives. In France, it consisted essentially of the joining together of Europe's first great proletarian insurrection with the acute discontent of the left liberals who shared John Stuart Mill's view of the conservatization of the July monarchy. The uprising of February 1848 illuminated the hopes of a social republic, a vague socialist utopia that would provide jobs to the unemployed and liberation to all those who suffered indignities and inequalities. Everyone put forward their claims, the artisans, the peasants, the women, the slaves. The liberals acted in 1848 just as they had in 1830. Dismayed by a regime that had become too rigid, too illiberal, they rose up and quickly won the day. Then, dismayed by the possibility that the lower strata would be able to take advantage of the situation and push things too far," this is again, remember, we have to trust our brothers and sisters. We must have faith that all of us want the same things, ultimately. We want to be big. We want to grow our gifts. And we need to trust that in each other. Afraid that the lower strata would take advantage of the situation and push things too far, they renewed their links with the political groups they had just ousted from power. Because the enemy at present, quote unquote, is on the left. When Louis Napoleon made his coup d'etat on December 2nd, 1851, the primary objective was to repress the left. The secondary objective was, however, to constrain the ability of conservative forces to act other than through him. That doesn't sound like a buffoon, does it? Continuing, one can, if one wants, emphasize the Caesarist, the so-called Bonapartist element in the regime. If one does, however, one risks missing the degree to which the outcome of the repression, which was both real and effective, was that of a centrist regime oriented to capitalist expansion, constructing a liberal compromise. One, and we'll be discussing how he uses the word liberal. It's not the way in the U.S. people think of it. Constructing a liberal compromise, one led not by a classical liberal, but by an enlightened conservative, unquote, from Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System, 4, Centrist Liberalism Triumphant. If, as is the argument here, power has gone shadow to pursue a vision on the down low, views accumulation as means, as Hirschman has helped us to see, to realize this dream, then Napoleon the nephew may be helping to launch that vessel. And we're going to continue for a little bit briefly with the 18th Brumaire and in what follows. Ask yourselves, does this sound familiar? I thought of George Bush in particular and his run for president. The lesser, continuing. What the National Atelier were for the socialist workers, what the Garde Mobile were for the bourgeois Republicans, the Society of December 10 was for Bonaparte, the party fighting force peculiar to him. On his journeys, the detachments of this society, packing the railways, had to improvise a public for him, stage public enthusiasm, roar, vive l'empereur, insult and thrash Republicans. Of course, under the protection of the police. On his return journeys to Paris, they had to form the advance guard, forestall counter demonstrations, or disperse them. The Society of December 10 belonged to him. And I mean, obviously, the presidential run of Bush, this fits perfectly, but this is what we see in every mobilization on the left that has any ability to challenge power to any degree. They mobilize the counter demonstrations. They make sure they infiltrate in our demonstrations with folks who claim they need this ability to smash windows because whatever, some peculiar rationale that no one believes, but the media then make sure it gets distributed ad infinitum and make sure that becomes the last image that folks have of what happened, and that the any kind of righteous cause gets suppressed and never discussed. Anyway, continuing. On his return journeys to Paris, they had to form the advance guard, forestall counter demonstrations, or disperse them. The Society of December 10 belonged to him. It was his work, his very own idea. Whatever else he appropriates is put into his hands by the force of circumstances. Whatever else he does, the circumstance do for him, or he is content to copy from the deeds of others. But Bonaparte, with official phrases about order, religion, family, and property in public before the citizens, and with the secret society of the Schufters and Spiegelbergs, and that's a reference to a Schiller drama, The Robbers, a reference to folks who murder and plunder unimpeded by any moral scruples. The society of disorder, prostitution, and theft behind him. That is Bonaparte himself as original author, and the history of the Society of December 10 is his own history. And my comment, this can't be the first use of this tactic. Is it Machiavellian? The Bonapartes are Italian. And we'll just read a bit more from 18th Brumaire and his description of the December 10 Society. Now, it happened, by way of exception, that people's representatives belonging to the party of order came under the cudgels of the Decembrists. Still more, Jan, the police commissioner assigned to the National Assembly and charged with watching over its safety, acting on the deposition of a certain Allais, advised the permanent commission that a section of the Decembrists had decided to assassinate General Jean Garnier and Dupin, the president of the National Assembly, and had already designated the individuals who were to perpetuate the deed. One comprehends the terror of Monsieur Dupin. A parliamentary inquiry into the Society of December 10, that is, the profanation of the Bonapartist secret world, seemed inevitable. Just before the meeting of the National Assembly, Bonaparte providently disbanded his society. Naturally, only on paper, for in a detailed manner, at the end of 1851, police prefect Charlier still sought in vain to move him to really break up the Decembrists. The Society of December 10 was to remain the private army of Bonaparte until he succeeded in transforming the public army into a Society of December 10. Bonaparte made the first attempt at this shortly after the adjournment of the National Assembly, and precisely with the money just wrested from it. As a fatalist, he lives in the conviction that there are certain higher powers which man, and the soldier in particular, cannot withstand. Among these powers, he counts first and foremost cigars and champagne, cold poultry and garlic sausage. Accordingly, to begin with, he treats officers and non-commissioned officers in his Élysée apartments to cigars and champagne, to cold poultry and garlic sausages. On October 3rd, he repeats this maneuver with the mass of the troops at the Saint-Maur Review, and on October 10, the same maneuver on a still larger scale at the Satory Army Parade. The uncle, and he's talking about Napoleon, the original. The uncle remembered the campaigns of Alexander in Asia, The nephew, the triumphal marches of Bacchus in the same land. Alexander was a demigod, to be sure, but Bacchus was a god, and moreover, the tutelary deity of the Society of December 10. And we'll end on that note. Oh, there's worse gods to worship, huh? Anywho, thank you so much for tuning in. And I'm hoping this actually went out over the internet and that folks are taking to heart this moment we're in. A moment very pregnant with hope and challenge. And let's make sure these times give birth to our freedom. Thank you so much for listening. And very grateful you're there. I love you. Until next week, peace.
Next.